Welcome to the Maria Heller Show, the Internet's original podcast. Since the year 2000, always ahead of the curve, always on your side. A true warrior for truth and justice, Maria and her guests leave nothing out, and no one is off limits. There is only one truth, the rest is lies. Sit back, enjoy the education with a true daughter of Mother Earth. Sharp New York wit, spiritual knowing, and a very dry sense of humor, Maria will dissect the news and lies to make it all palatable. Education is power. Maria delivers rapid-fire truth like no one else can. Here she is, the mouth that roars, the legendary Maria Heller.
Good morning, world. Maria here, alive and kicking. Welcome to Tragedy and Help with my guest, Richard Grove. Richard and I haven't talked for so long, at least it seems that way to me. So I'm really happy to have Rich with me. I'm going to post a link in today's show to a specific YouTube channel so you guys can check out a lot of Richard's work. And of course, if you're new to the show, tragedyandhope.com, Peace Revolution, so many websites, but Rich's work speaks for itself. Good morning, Richard Grove.
Good morning, Maria. Great to talk to you.
I know. How it seems like forever since we last talked. I'm doing okay.
It's only been a couple months.
Well, but a couple of months, the whole world flips upside down. You know, it's like, oh my God, where do we start? Before we get into all the excellent work you've been doing, and I'm so glad you covered Silk Road, because we will get into that, Rich, but I have to tell you, when that was happening, there must have been 10 other big stories breaking, and I was spending so much time on those that even though I noticed some of the posts about Silk Road, I really didn't get into it. So I'm so glad you did, and that's one good thing I can count on. It's what I can't cover. Most of my co-hosts are already into and going crazy with. So we will get to that. But I think one of the biggest stories, you and I before have talked about Wesley Clark. We talked about his list of the nations that they actually had a list of the countries that we wanted to hit and in the order we wanted to hit. And at that time, I pretty much respected him. But now he's come out and said that we should have internment camps for disloyal Americans until the war on terror is over. So my thought was, aha, now the reason for, you know, the FEMA camps, you know, the trains everybody's talking about. And, you know, the war on terror was never intended to be ever over. It was never fully described to any of us. Nor is he specifically saying what being disloyal as an American would comprise of. I mean, I don't know if you got to hear this. This is like the big story breaking since yesterday.
Well, Maria, I usually don't keep up with the news. However, I am familiar with that because it was brought to my attention because Wesley Clark is, of course, a Rhodes Scholar. He very much represents a British agenda in America to change our attitudes, values, behaviors, and beliefs. And what he's describing is something like Cecil Rhodes created in South Africa. It's called apartheid. It's the same thing that's practiced in other countries today because of those British creations in South Africa, where they ran an experiment away from the prying eyes of the good people of Europe. So they're casting a very broad net with this use of disloyal Americans. Well, you know, let's break that down. So the first thing you start with is, who is this guy Wesley Clark? What does it mean that he's a Rhodes Scholar? Who is Cecil Rhodes? What is the agenda of the Rhodes Scholars? Who are the other Rhodes Scholars that he might be working in league with to get people to take on these ideas, which are very un-American, but have been practiced, unfortunately, in the 20th century because of the influence on America's foreign and domestic policies by other long-standing, very historically adept factions that have manipulated us through mass media.
Well, you know, a lot of people are just assuming he's talking about Muslim Americans, which I think is crazy. But, you know, when Bush, the idiot king, came out with the war on terror, there was no definition. There was no definition as to what is a terrorist. You know, when that white kid supposedly shot up that black church, it was a very peaceful, calm arrest. They put a bulletproof vest on him. They took him to Burger King because he said he was hungry. And yet when you had a man with a Muslim name just shoot up a military recruitment office, they immediately called it an act of terrorism.
what they're saying is not associated with ISIS, even though there seem to be connections to that that Anglo-American sponsored terrorist entity that's used to create a divide and conquer mentality with people. So it's murky because, okay, so I would say that when people are watching TV and you see these stories come out, whether it's about Greece or it's about ISIS or it's about Wesley Clark saying that they should have internment camps, you got to take a step back. That's not the end of learning. That's the beginning of learning. That's where you start to ask them questions about who, you know, what is ISIS? What's the history of this Islamic extremism, specifically Wahhabism, that was used to ignite all this trouble that we still see in Afghanistan today, but it came from Saudi Arabia, and how did they get there, and how did the Saudi royal family get there? You get into some very interesting American and British history about espionage and how the spy networks worked and how the oil cartels sought to keep their power, sought to subvert the monopoly regulations that were in America, the anti-monopoly regulations, and go over there and have a worldwide monopoly. So it's only through observing these individual instances that you're seeing on TV ad nauseum, they're going on all the time. Like you mentioned, during the time of the Silk Road trial and that the whole thing was going on, there were so many other things going on. People, you know, have to take a step one at a time and decide what is a priority to find out about. Mm-hmm. Oh, the history of this free market that they just busted, or the latest thing about the Kardashians, or, you know, whatever else is going on, right?
Right.
So we're going to be flooded with media from now until the end of our lives, most likely because of the internet, because of the ever-growing presence of all these devices that pick it up. So we have to be very discerning where we put our time. And essentially, you have a magic box in front of you into which you can type a couple sentences and find out about anything. Mm-hmm. So given all the cool things in the world, what do you actually want to focus your time on, and what do you need to be able to learn about that stuff, and what do you need to be able to make heads or tails and make a strategic decision in your life? So, you know, there's a lot there.
Absolutely. Well, well said. But, you know, there's just so much being thrown at us, like 24/7, that, you know, I'm surfing all the time, and I'm like, oh, my God, is this story big enough? You know, years ago, any one of these minor stories would have been top news. And I don't mean to say Silk Road is a minor story. What I'm saying is they throw so much at you. I still believe in obfuscation. Okay, just distraction, you know, too much for you to take in, where you actually have to say, right, how do I pick and choose what's most important for my audience to know?
Well, I mean, it's not even for me to choose for my audience with what's most important for them. It's about me choosing what's most important for me.
Right.
Like at the time of the Silk Road bust back in 2013, I had never used the Silk Road. I, you know, heard of it vaguely in, you know, conversations outside of the, you know, the office space that I use, right? Mm-hmm. So outside my house, I bump into people. Sometimes they mention stuff about that, but I didn't know anything about it, so I didn't pick up on anything that's being said. And so the notion that these things can be there, be useful, be used by all these different people, be gone, be busted, and then that's when someone, I look at news every day, but I also didn't use Tor. I didn't have a need to do anything that was encrypted or, you know, be a purchaser or, you know, seller on that market. So it's an interesting cultural phenomenon in American history. Here's this kid who creates a free market, and it creates a free market in a place where that market was previously controlled by gangsters in a monopoly using the covert, you know, front of a drug war and getting everyone to support it while they're the ones that brought in the drugs time and time again through the government evidence that they've disclosed so far and through other journalist evidence that they've, some of them have died for. So there's this whole, you know, dichotomy there to be unraveled and understood if you just don't believe, oh, that, you know, this guy allegedly hired assassins, did X, Y, and Z. That's not true. It wasn't presented in court as evidence. It's like, you know, so he didn't get a fair trial because it was decided that he was guilty way before they even collected evidence or had a trial or got denied, you know, to present their side of it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where I came across it.
So the trial was basically another show trial, like most of them are, like James Holmes and Boston and all the rest of them, where you're already convicted before you walk into the courtroom.
Well, and when you get into the details, it's like, I didn't know, I found out this place existed, then it got busted, and that was all I knew for a while. And then the time that I really got interested in it was, there was a podcast by Joe Rogan called The Joe Rogan Experience, on which he interviewed Alex Winter, who, if you've seen Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, he's the guy who's not Keanu Reeves.
Oh,
so I thought, I had nothing else to do, I was fishing. I figure I'll listen to this podcast, and I didn't expect to hear what I heard. I didn't know Alex had turned into a serious documentary filmmaker, that he had made a film on Napster and, you know, done some other projects that were pretty interesting. And so I find myself with very low expectations, you know, getting my mind blown, because all of this went on and he made a film about it. I think it's called Deep Web, which is out there in circulation now. And I've never seen that film. I just heard the interview. And from the interview, then I came home and started asking questions and trying to find some answers. And when you look into it for yourself, you just start finding all these irregularities. And then when you start interviewing people about it, you find even more irregularities. And it's like, if this guy, Ross Ulbricht, was so guilty, why did they have to deny him a fair trial? Why did they have to consider him guilty before, you know, having a trial before his peers?
Right.
And presenting evidence in his defense.
Right. Well, for listeners that don't know, what is or was Silk Road?
The Silk Road, in simplest terms, from how I understand it, was something like an Amazon or an eBay for things that are considered to be illegal by the U.S. government or state governments or what have you. It was a market aside from the black market. The black market was controlled by those who prohibit things. And there was a couple regulations on there to protect people. There was a couple limitations on what you could sell. There was no child pornography or anything like that allowed to be sold. But, you know, if you wanted to buy mushrooms or, you know, some sort of marijuana or, you know, all these different varieties of different drugs that are out there, it created a bargain place that was encrypted between buyers and sellers. And it was very successful for several years until government agents who had gained full administrative access to the site for a long time then were able to bust him, allegedly. I mean, that's a story I was told by his mom.
Right. So it kind of seemed to me, because I did get over to the website freeross.org, where people can go get more information and donate to help get this kid out of jail. And I looked it over, and I was kind of at first a little conflicted, because I was like, well, okay, if he was, you know, it seemed to me, the way it came to me was, this guy was the owner of the website, but he was not the one that put all the content there. But
no.
He got busted for the content.
It was a voluntary market, free exchange that he wasn't in the middle of. He was like Craig Newmark from Craigslist, or Mark Zuckerberg of Facebook, saying, here's a template, you guys use it for whatever you want, and it's none of my business.
Right. Well, that was my understanding, that he was pretty much the owner of the site, but he wasn't the guy posting the content. But either way, you know, there were illegal items going back and forth. So I would assume that part of their case might have been, it's your site, you're responsible for it, or you knew about it, or whatever they used. You know, I immediately thought of, oh my God, you know, could my web guy get in trouble for hosting my site? You know, that was like the first thing I thought of. Not that I could get in trouble, but could my web server or my web guy, you know, get in trouble for this? And I think that's the most important part of this kid's story, is this could happen to any of us, because it surely looks like they certainly, you know, manufactured evidence and certainly didn't present any real evidence.
Well, I've never met Ross. I've only read about the case and familiarized myself just like anyone else can do. So I'm not about saying this kid did or didn't do these things. I'm saying the dangerous precedents that have been set by the court rigging the trial, denying them a fair trial, allowing evidence one day and then coming back almost a week later and telling the jury to disregard everything about these other federal agents who had infiltrated, these other people who were plausibly in control of the admin at the time that these things were done. Mm-hmm. All these huge irregularities that happened to pertain to his specific case also set the dangerous precedent for a very low standard of evidence in courts and very broad terms that are ambiguous and nonspecific being used. And so just the fact that I see those tactics being used by the federal government makes me really question what's going on here. And when I see that the precedent that's being set, if it's not overturned, applies to the rest of us, and we'll probably, like, they're using it for, they're doing these things for a reason, okay? They're making an example of him for a reason. So once more people start to think about it, it's about all of us. It's about, we're not free in the situation either. Our rights are being dissolved too, and we just don't happen to be sitting in a, you know, federal prison in Brooklyn right now. So thankfully, we can do something about it.
Well,
because it's happening to all of us who are, you know, having our privacy terminated by people who want to use that use of our information to control us and to subvert our freedom.
Well, also to scare the rest of us. It's kind of like how they pick one famous person every year around tax time to bust for not paying their taxes, to terrorize everybody else into paying their taxes.
Yeah, a lot of this control system is dependent on fear. The next step is ignorance, and that's usually an individual who fears to actually ask the questions and do some learning.
Right.
And I say the only thing to fear in that case really is fear itself. You know, get away from that and start learning. Use that interaction that's heightened your awareness to now go forward and ask some questions and gain some knowledge and gain some, experience with it, and you're going to be much less fearful, much less likely to be controlled by fear.
Right.
That's what I'm saying.
Absolutely. Well, you know, the very fact, and it's not news to any of my listeners or anybody, you know, on any of my social media sites, that federal agents are constantly monitoring and faking, you know, that they're your friends or whatever on these sites. And I think Silk Road really showed that these federal agents not only can steal from you, but they can also manipulate everything you've got, your logs, your chats, your emails, your posts, your bank account, all of it. So doesn't that come down to illegal search and seizure?
Absolutely. Just because your papers in effect are now data that might be held on a server elsewhere doesn't mean it's not your data. It doesn't mean you don't have property rights anymore. The negation of property rights is the negation of the individual. Without property, you don't have the ability to survive. Without tools to shelter yourself and make fire and make clothes and do these other things we need to survive, not to mention to thrive in a world where everything seems to be corporate society, you have to have license and permit and all this other stuff. You got to be able to step back from that and say, what does it, you know, really mean that they are trying to subvert us, young, middle-aged, and old-age, all around? It's a full-spectrum type of dominance where we are being bombarded by all these non-essential things that they're doing, they're not necessary to take away our rights. They have to have an agenda if they have a full-spectrum dominance strategy against us to take away our freedom. Now, as an individual, my policy is I don't aggress on other people's freedom. I don't violate their volition, and I don't take away their freedom. And I expect them to do likewise for me. And as a nation, we should probably act like that as well. And when people are aggressing on your freedom, you have to take steps to make sure that your freedom is preserved, because your freedom is your life.
Exactly. Kind of reminds me of something Martin Luther King said years ago, and you could apply it to freedom too. He says, justice doesn't exist for anyone unless it exists for everyone.
Well, there's also some good Frederick Douglass quotes about that as well. About the celebration of independence on July 4th. That's a good thing to look up and keep it real. Slavery is something that still goes on today. It's just a lot more subtle, and it's a lot broader than that. And it's not 100% full-time. It's just like several months of a year of your time that they're going to steal through, involuntary taxation that we were all born into. It's like we're all born into a system ongoing. That system has evolved while we were trying to learn about how the system was when we got here. But if you look at how things are today, it's heavily, heavily dependent on large numbers of people to obediently just follow orders and not question why they're doing these things. And as long as they have that momentum, we're going to continue to see more of what we've had up to this point. But my hope is through creating freedom-related media that helps to liberate your mind and sharing that all over the place, people can listen to it or watch it if they want to. It's all voluntary. And if they find it useful, maybe they'll listen again or check out another episode or share it with somebody else. And that's how freedom literally grows. It's from us interacting with each other either face-to-face or through creating media and other people consuming media. I consume a ton of media. I watch, everything that, my colleagues do. I try to check it out, anything that's meaningful or substantial. I'm reading books all the time on the past history, the present history, projections of what's going on published by the governments that say, hey, here's what's going to happen in 2035. And those are legitimate plans that they're working off of to plan the future. You don't think they just let this all happen every day. They got documents and plans you can read, which are more interesting than anything we could ever talk about on this show. So really, if you want to check it out, the DCDC Strategic Trends Program, PROGRAMME, because it's a British document, it's on like the Ministry of Defense or the British government. And you can see what the plan for America is. It's all in there.
Right.
There's several of them. They publish them every couple of years.
I know. They put it right out in your face, right out in the open, brazen hussies, and figure nobody will notice it. A little bit more on this Silk Road. This kid, from my understanding, was 26 years old when this happened. And even though he had what I call, you know, a show trial, the judge sentenced him to life in prison. I mean, who sentences somebody to life in prison for something like this?
And he has no chance at early parole or, you know, anything like that because it's a federal case. So unlike Charles Manson, who could actually get out on parole, Ross Ulbricht is a political prisoner who's being held, has a sentence that is highly unusual, and it's a form of persecution that is rarely seen up close and personal. And you know, Ross's case, if he was 26, I'm not sure how old he is now because I'm not sure when that date was provided. But he wasn't somebody who was in his 40s or 50s. You know, it was a young emerging mind who said, "Hey, I see some problems with the world. I'm going to try to create something to fix it." And that's the entrepreneurial, inventive nature that is essential to America's surviving and thriving. That's how we got here. We can't lose that completely. We've lost a lot of it. And we're trying to rejuvenate that and reinvigorate it right now. But Ross saw a problem, and like many of us, when we see that problem, we try to do something about it. I create what I, you know, have created over the past decade because I saw problems, and I was like, how can I create something to try to change it? Mm-hmm. And the idea of persistence, because the Silk Road wasn't the first thing that Ross had tried to create to show the ideas of the free market in action. And it was only after several failed projects that he had that very, very successful project. At one time, I think it was valued at like $1 billion. So he didn't get any of that money for himself. He didn't have that money after the Silk Road went out of business and all this other sort of stuff went on. But at one time, that was a very promising venture until the other people who had a monopoly on that market came in and rigged up charges and had the jury discount and disavow evidence that was given during a trial that was credible and relevant. Mm-hmm. Only because there's some secret meeting that happened over the weekend between Thursday and Tuesday. So there's all these intricacies, and one just has to ask themselves all the time. It's like, you know, if the government's so right about that case, and that kid is so guilty, and what he did is so egregious, then why do they have to rig the trial? Why do they have to deny him his fair trial? I mean, that's an essential human right that should be applied anywhere on the planet. The right to face your accusers, the right for them to present their evidence and for you to present your defense, and that's how things have worked in the past.
Well, they did the same.
When the government denies that to an individual, government obviously has every advantage, unlimited budget, they can pay professional witnesses $50,000, but they can deny the individual of coming in with an expert witness.
Well,
so
they kind of did, right? They kind of did the same thing with the show trial of the supposed Boston bomber, who's now asking for a new trial. I said new trial would be the first trial, but when they don't want to present any evidence, I mean, it was the worst defense. His attorney walks in basically and says he's guilty. You knew it was just going to be a show trial because of the irregularities on that story, but this case with this guy from Silk Road. What I found interesting was it was the fourth life sentence in 1 year by the same judge.
Yeah, that's very interesting as well. And people should check out why, you know, what's going on that causes all those life sentences. Are these violent offenders? Whose rights or freedom did Ross breach?
Gangsters.
That was brought up in the trial. It wasn't brought up in the trial, and if it happened, it should have been brought up in the trial. If I, as an individual, have not damaged your property, and I haven't broken a contract with you, guess what? I haven't infringed on your freedom, and you can have a nice day. Mm-hmm. And that's it. That's all there is to law.
I agree.
And you don't even need to know all these, you know, they got law. They say to be ignorant of the law is no excuse. No, ignorance of the law is every excuse because they make up the law as they go along every day, and they don't see fit to notify you about it. So from my standpoint, a responsible individual understands the difference between right and wrong. My rights stop where your rights begin. The definition of wrong would be to take away your rights, or if you were to take away my rights. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
Right, wrong.
Absolutely. But like you said, they wanted to, you know, create some more fear and terror. I understand that even investigators don't want to go near this case because they know they'll be paying the price, too, like those New York Times reporters did, you know, years ago. So, you know, you talk about media. The media is terrified to cover anything real. You look at this Jade Helm exercise that's going on, and my understanding, even in states, they didn't say it was going to happen. And the media is prohibited, not even embedded with them. There's no media allowed.
So, you know, it's funny that you say that, because I'm about to finish editing an interview I did with Luke Radowski, and the topic in the interview was on his coverage of the G7 and infiltrating the Bilderberg meetings. And I would have mentioned this to you if we had time before the call, but we didn't, so I'm glad you brought it up. The fact that the media is sold out is so easily seen from so many perspectives right now. Luke gives you a little glimpse into his, you know, his world and his view on it and through his experiences at the Bilderberg Group. But he was with the White House press corps. Like, he was having drinks with these guys and asking them, like, hey, why don't you guys cover this? And they're like, because they got a family and they got a house and they want to keep their job and that they're not real journalists. They're just there to copy and paste and put some words around the official statements, and that's their thing. It's a soft, cushy job, and that's what they're doing. And they told him that he was doing real, you know, what he was doing was real journalism. And that video will be out Wednesday, July 22nd. So, you know, from today, it's tomorrow afternoon.
Cool. Absolutely. Well, when he got to the G7 and the Bilderberg Group, what did he learn? Or was he just talking with other reporters and hanging on the perimeter?
No, what he learned was, if you go up to where, you know, if you go in with other people that are going in to get their press passes, and you get up in line and you ask and say, hey, I'm here to pick up my press pass, and you give your name and they don't have your name, and then you lament the fact that you just flew in from New York, and, you know, you'll turn around and go back, and then they're like, no, let us make you a press pass. And so that's how he got in with the same press pass that was given to the White House press corps and these other journalists, just by going up and asking, and then he got to attend the meeting. And then after that, he and two other journalists went 30 miles away to the Bilderberg Group. Now, there's a lot of White House press corps that had just gone there. So when they showed up, they got these badges. The security just checked all these other people through. Yeah, these guys got video equipment. Okay. They got reservations at the hotel. Okay. So they went up there. They got a bunch of footage from within the Bilderberg Hotel. And then when they discovered who they were and they had to kick them out, but they were paying customers, they basically tell him, he talks about it during the interview, the guy comes up to the door and he's like, hey, you guys have to get out now. You pay for everything. You can go ahead and clear the minibar. Take whatever you want, but you guys have to get out right now. So they not only got to stay there, but the Bilderberg Group or whoever was paying the hotel picked up the tab just to get them out before the security showed up.
Pretty cool. Pretty cool. You sent me a note. A lot of you're indefatigable when it comes to your workload. I have to tell you that when you sent me that list with 26 different videos on it, I was like, oh my God. But you were talking about a Porcupine Freedom Festival 2015. What's that?
Last year I went to the Porcupine Freedom Festival with Lisa and another friend of ours here from East Hartford, Dylan. And we stayed up at Lancaster, New Hampshire, and it's an outdoor freedom festival that's held at a campground. And so some people bring their camper, some people pitch a tent, some people stay across the street in a hotel. So there's a variety of ways to enjoy the Freedom Festival. It's week-long. It goes from Sunday to Sunday, usually the second or third week of June. So we had gone last year. I lugged a ton of, you know, all my equipment, stuff that I thought I needed back then, but probably didn't need on that trip because it didn't get used. There's a lot of things going on that I would rather enjoy than try to set up all this stuff and make people sweat under some lights when it's already 90 degrees outside. But this year, I had it better planned out. I took the minimum amount of equipment that I needed. I made sure I had a tent, you know, a pop-up shelter. That way, the light wasn't directly on the people I was interviewing. And having made a whole bunch of new friends last year, that, you know, they were like, oh, yeah, let's do this. And so I ended up asking a lot of different people who came through the place we were staying, you know, basic five questions about Porcfest and, you know, freedom. So the Porcupine Freedom Festival, the porcupine represents non-aggression but strong self-defense. And so it's like the mascot animal of the Freedom Festival. So the abbreviation on that is Porcfest. So, yeah, there was probably, I think there's 27 different people or scenes that I had filmed from Porcfest. Some of them are short. Other ones are feature-length interviews. I looked at it as a good opportunity to just practice getting better at doing what I'm doing. and I've got a pretty good work ethic. I get up every morning at 5 or 6 or maybe 7 if I'm sleeping in, and I work all day until probably 7 or 8, and then I run rendering and all sorts of processing overnight of the footage that I don't want to sit here and waste my time during the day waiting for stuff to do that. So I'm good about organizing things, scheduling things, tending to the priorities to be able to stay productive and focused on, you know, experiencing freedom for myself and then sharing how that's done with others.
Well, nobody could accuse you of not working hard, Rich. As a matter of fact, you're only 10 days ahead of my actual kickoff date of starting 16 years on the net of this show.
Well, congratulations.
Hard to believe. Hard to believe. All I think about is when that kid asked me to try internet radio in 2000, and I said, sure, I'll try it for a couple of weeks. Might be fun. So I guess a couple of weeks turned into forever, because back in those days, I thought the stolen election of 2000, Rich, was going to be the biggest story I ever covered. Man, was I wrong. Anyway, we're going to take a short break. When we get back, Rich has interviewed some pretty interesting people, some that I've interviewed on my show, and one in particular. God, I must have interviewed him 15 years ago. So stay with us. Rich and I will be right back.
Wow. One solid hour of commercial-free information thanks to you. The person who wants truth has the integrity and understanding to support it with your donation and subscription. Maria believes people can handle the truth and delivers it tirelessly with those with ears to listen. 14 years on the net. Won't you take a moment right now to commit to a subscription of your choice at www.maria.net. That's M-E-R-I-A.net. Over 1,100 hours of pure education all in one place, 24/7 and all downloadable. Knowledge is power. Sharing that knowledge is wisdom. Together we can change the world and create real hope. Now let's get back to the Maria Heller Show.
Welcome back to Tragedy and Hope with my excellent co-host, Richard Grove. If you're not familiar with his work, get over to peacerevolution.org, tragedyandhope.com, and don't leave out or forget the YouTube link I'm putting here so you can see all these videos yourself. Rich, it was pretty interesting to see that you had interviewed John Loftus, who I interviewed so many years ago. I think his name of his book then was The Nazis in America, or The Nazi Hydra in America. And we talked at that time about how we brought in Nazis after World War II, how, you know, pretty much everything we have was seeded with Nazis, from NASA to the CIA, etc. What did you talk to John Loftus about?
Well, the first book of John Loftus's that I got back in, you know, years ago, probably about 2004, 2005, was called The Belarus Secret, and I think he published it in 1981. Now, that was recently republished with additional information as America's Nazi Secret. So, long story short, because I interviewed him for over two days for about like 7 hours, and I'd gone through all the books that he had written, and then I put these things in chronological order, so he unfolds a story that goes, you know, period in American history by the next period in American history. So, because I was just trying to preserve and illustrate, here's someone who had secret access. It's beyond top secret. It's called cosmic access, which means he got to see the NATO files, the British files, the American files. And most Americans aren't allowed to see the British and NATO files, especially pertaining to World War II, especially pertaining to the Nazis. And there's good reason for that. There's also a reason that when you saw communist infiltration all through the American intelligence establishment in the 40s and 50s, that in most of those cases, there's a British officer or British Rhodes Scholar-trained American officer that is their boss or their attorney. And it gets really interesting when you actually start to look outside of the box that they've been giving us, man. The box they've given us is so small compared to what's accessible today. It's unbelievable. It's so many are in it. I mean, doesn't it feel crowded? So Loftus, in his next book, I think it was Unholy Trinity in 1991, and then he wrote Secret War Against the Jews, I think, in 1998. And across all these books, what you find out is, you know, if I can just mesh them all together, in 1916, Alan Dulles became an agent of the British intelligence establishment through the use of a honeypot, which means they got Alan to sleep with this chick. He provided her with information. They then came and busted him and said, hey, you're trading with the enemy and you're ours. So from a very early time in Dulles' career, he was under the thumb of British intelligence. He and his brother then go to Paris, 1919, at Versailles. We think he's there, like, negotiating this treaty post-World War I. Really, at the time, their clients were Kaiser Wilhelm, who's on the other side of the table, and a bunch of German industrialists. Then, in the 20s and 30s, the Dulles brothers go and get all these companies who had the monopoly trust break up in America, and you can't have, you know, monopoly. Hey, you know, they're going to create that. You can come over here and use Germany as that type of place. So during the roaring 20s, these guys are investing. By the time all the investment dollars move over to Germany, all these corporations put their money in IBM, et cetera, then you've got the Great Depression in the 30s in America, while all these other entities that are multinational now are thriving in Germany. And then those multinational corporations during World War II have Belgian and Swiss and French and American offices. So no matter which side of the war wins, they're going to be protected and they're not going to get scuttled, along with all the other stuff that they want to get rid of.
Mm-hmm. Well, so, plus they made a lot of money. You know, I'm sure when you were looking at Silk Road and what happened to Ross, imagine if the courts were like that at the time Prescott Bush and Avril Harriman were busted for trading with the enemies. I mean, they didn't go to jail.
No.
They didn't get life in
prison.
Their son
became, you know, their son became president.
Right.
And my mom became president.
Exactly. They set up the Bush dynasty when they were worried about the JFK or the Kennedy dynasty, which, of course, the Dulles brothers had a big part in ending.
Well, and so the Bushes are below the Dulleses as far as Eastern establishment goes, and the Dulles brothers acted as attorneys for the Rockefellers. So Alan Dulles was the guy who was helping Nelson Rockefeller put money into Nazi Germany and then protect Nazi war criminals afterwards. And there's a whole bunch of interesting artifacts and evidence regarding that. But the story that's going on today is very much connected to the story that's gone on in the past. We're just seeing the latest elements of it. You know, you got a Rhodes Scholar's wife, Hillary Clinton, going for president, and you got the Skull and Bones family kid going for a second term of the presidency for, you know, a son of George H.W. Bush. You know, you had George W. Bush, now you're going to have Jeb. Otherwise, you got Hillary. Those look like the two choices, and that's aristocracy. That's not America. That's not telling, you know, it's easy enough for kids today to smell the BS when someone says anyone can grow up to be president. No, that's not true. If you check out the lineage and the heritage and the genealogy of the American presidents, all but one are related back to King of England.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we might have a little bit further to go to get some freedom here. Somebody might have said, hey, you guys can stop now. You got some freedom. Here's your, Article of Confederation government, and then we're going to replace it with this other government, and all of a sudden you're back in the British system, so we don't need to fight anymore. We can all speak the same language and be close, you know, allies, and you guys can worship the British royalty.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's all good. That's all well and good until you get back to, wait, what were the basis of separating from Britain in the first place? Oh, they were putting troops on the street, and they were violating our privacy, and they were taxing us unfairly without any direct causal representation, and that's what we have today.
Absolutely. I don't know how many times a week I say we have taxation without representation. You know, because you mentioned Jeb Bush, and I will tell you, probably the first person sticks out in my mind, Jack Blood, he said, like, I don't know, 2-3 years ago, his prediction was this would be Jeb versus Hillary, regardless of, you know, Donald Trump and Bobby Jindal and all the other morons they keep pushing out there. What do you think about the GOP ticket so far? And do you think everybody on there but Jeb Bush is a stalking horse?
I don't think about it. I don't vote. I urge people who vote to vote for nobody.
Vote for no one. What about Bernie Sanders? What's your feeling on him? Does he have a chance in hell?
I don't have any feelings on Bernie Sanders.
You don't?
I know he's a socialist from Vermont who espouses some ideas of freedom. But at the end of the day, it's all going to validate a broken system.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to be fixable until people learn the difference of right and wrong, and you learn that, you know, shiny badges don't grant people special rights, and you start to learn to think for yourself, and, you know, the idea of overturning this monarchy in our minds of, you know, disobedience happens with questioning it.
Mm-hmm.
Question why we're so obedient. What are we voting for? We're voting for them to use our tax dollars that they extort from us to wage more wars that we have no interest in fighting.
Right.
And they're creating wars now that are just the cause and effect of wars that they waged, you know, 10 years ago that had no just founding. But people are like, oh, you know, whatever, we'll, you know,
right.
take over Iraq and we'll rebuild their society. No, that's not what happened. And that's not what they planned. What's going on right now is exactly what they planned.
Exactly.
You read their plan.
Exactly.
Their plan is not for peace, and their definition of peace, if they reach peace, is peace by coercion and monopoly on force and used, you know, against people. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's a Kafka-esque world. I'll tell you what. I spent a couple weekends a couple months ago rereading through Solzhenitsyn's Gulag Archipelago. Now, you know, before you go assuming that what you think is going on, you should read that book, because I'll be damned if there aren't a lot of parallels between what he was noticing back then and what was going on and what they're doing today.
Well, it kind of reminds you of that sentence, you know, the more things change, the more they stay the same. You know, you look at, and I know that somewhere in what I was watching that you put together, you talked about TPP. Well, at the time, everybody here, sort of like the Greeks who voted no against austerity and were all happy, and a week later they got their ass handed to them. Here we thought, you know, a week earlier we had defeated TPP, and then they brought out the gay marriage ruling. They brought out, I'm trying to think, it was the gay marriage and probably the Confederate flag bullshit was starting. And a week later, Congress, without any fanfare, gave Obama approval and TPP went through. How many people know that when they were paying attention to whether a baker is making a cake for a gay couple or whether, you know, the Confederate flag stands for racism or history? You know what I'm saying? And then they just slip it on in.
You're just pointing out, you're sitting in the audience and you're like, hey, this person on stage is doing a magic trick, and, you know, here's the misdirection and here's the actuality. If you don't look at the distraction media out there and you dig into something like the TPP or the Greece situation, you're going to find a common thread. The TPP situation is the latest in a work group that wants to have this thing called global governance. That's a real term. Look it up. There's a lot of history books on this. They're very open about doing this.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So global governance, TPP. And that all comes from the same thing that the Greeks are suffering under. After World War II, they had this conference called Bretton Woods, out of which they created the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank, who then loaned all these different countries around the world money, who just couldn't happen to pay that money back, so then these countries and the corporations that had run alongside with them, like parasites along a predator, go in and suck all the wealth out of that country. It's happened over and over again. You can read Confessions of an Economic Hitman by John Perkins. This is well known. But what's not well known is if you look at the people who actually founded the IMF and World Bank, the individual parts, the human beings who took specific action, they also happen to be people who were either funding the Nazis or Nazis themselves. So you've got people who are Hitler's banker coming together to make the World Bank and IMF and the Bank for International Settlements and all these different clearinghouses that are supposed to be like the United Nations of the financial world, when really they just go in and loan countries money that they know they can't pay back. So it's a form of loan sharking on a global scale, on a national scale, in order to make and dissolve those national boundaries to prepare for globalism. So it's like softening up the terrain before an invasion.
So right?
That's the type of strategy
right.
you can use. Now, in the Greek situation in particular, they were forced to loan the Nazis a lot of money. And guess what? After Germany lost the war, they said, hey, Greece, we don't owe you that money because we surrendered to the United States. So we're dealing with them, and you're out, and you know? And so that was already in place. And the World Bank and the IMF came by and said, hey, we'll pick up your debt. And they've been loaning those countries, you know, they've been loaning Greece in particular money for a long time. Now, the money that they got recently, all the bailout billions, whatever, that they claim to have given to the Greek people never made it to the Greek people. That money got put out, it got taken apart by a whole bunch of different banks who then consumed it. And if you look at the situation, so it's not like the Greek people themselves borrowed this money and didn't pay it back. No, some gangsters who happen to be, you know, in the case of Greece, a socialist Marxist who wants to say, hey, I'm going to sign all you people up for a bunch of things that you didn't agree to, like, that's wrong. I don't care if it's legal, it's still wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And so knowing the difference between right and wrong comes back to, they can put whatever they want down on these little pieces of paper about the TPP, etc. Trans-Pacific Partnership does not apply if it's violating the volition and the freedom of people in America.
But that's
you know,
what's
you don't have
right.
to honor it. You don't have to deal with it. You know, you don't have to, you know, but you can take it upon yourself to let other people know about that so that they don't try to enforce something upon you that you know is not freedom.
Well, don't you see the TPP is part of Agenda 21? Don't you see Jade Helm is a part of Agenda 21? Or what Wesley Clark just said is part of Agenda 21?
Well, they're all part of the same thing. Agenda 21 is just part of their transhumanism agenda. It's just part of their technocracy agenda. It's just part of their, how would you say it, their New World Order? I mean, it's all describing the same thing. All of these different things that people look into, it's like, hey, there's only a finite, it's a finite planet. There's only so many people here. Some of those people formed working groups for people who are really rich and powerful and wanted to change things, and that's actually what's going on. And there's a lot of documents associated with it, but you're never going to know about it if you don't take the time to find them and read them.
Right, or at least support the people that did, that are putting it out there in a more palatable way or quicker way for you to learn it. And sitting there, you know, I wouldn't. I don't think I'd have the time or patience to do all the book reading you're doing. And you might feel the same way about me for what I have to do what I do. But like you said, the information's there. But people really have to understand. And you're looking at, you know, I'm sure, I don't know whether you heard Jon Stewart after 16 years has given up. He just can't take it anymore. He said covering the news depresses him. Watching Fox News to do his show depresses him, and he didn't want to cover another election. I don't know how many times I've said that just this past year, that I don't want to cover another election. Because he obviously must know, as we do, that it's all bullshit, and we're going to be covering the same crap that I have to cover every 4 years, even though it's already in the bag before you think your vote is going to matter.
Back in 1908, I think that election is when the Warburg family, they bought each of the candidates. So each brother in the Warburg family funded a different candidate. And after I read through, it was an official family biography, so this wasn't like conspiracy theory on a website. It's like that family paid for this to be part of their public image. It's well-known history if you take time to read it. Once I saw that, I was like, well, when did that stop? And then you look at all the different, you know, elections and so-called candidates, and it's really just a pageant. That's not a job interview for the man who's going to control a country that has nuclear weapons. Are you kidding me? Like, the fact that we even think that somehow the president is qualified because, you know, he's qualified, went through a job interview. No. Like, you have to go through more of an interview process, I would imagine, to work at Walmart and certainly Google than you do to have to be the president of the United States.
I agree. I think you have to go through more than that just to get food stamps in America.
Yeah. So really, I don't know. Like, it's not a position that I think is appropriate. But
there's always people. Right. There's always people out there that still give you the same crap. Vote for the lesser evil. Vote for the lesser evil. And people still under the illusion that their vote matters when you've got, you know, all these billionaires, you know, funding every idiot that's running for office. I mean, you know, the Koch brothers have invested in pretty much almost all of the GOP candidates. So they don't lose.
Oh, if you just think about it for a second, vote for the lesser of two evils. Wait a minute, that's not a choice. Mm-hmm. Wait a minute, if that's not choice, that's not freedom. Mm-hmm. Wait a minute, that's slavery. Oh, okay, now we have a name for that lesser of two evils thing. It's called slavery. I'm opposed to all forms of human slavery. Which forms do you support?
None. Absolutely right. None. I always tell people, lesser of the two evils, you still end up with evil. Okay, and we don't have a choice. People, they're getting funded by the same people. All right, so the people at the top are the ones that pick who's going to wear the suit. I mean, we covered this so many times. And yet they're still trying, you know, their same old stuff, you know, photo IDs, rechanging, redistricting so they can steal more votes. But the vote doesn't matter anyway. They already know the outcome. I mean, look how quick Bush's cousin on Fox News called it for Bush in 2000. And as soon as he called it, it was a done deal. And the Supreme Court, another waste of space, went right along with it.
Yeah, that's a pageant. It's wag the dog. I'm more interested in people who learn how to question obedience. And when you question obedience and why you might be obedient to somebody or something that's, you know, going against your will, what's that all about? I saw a great talk recently, even though it was a Porkfest talk from 2014 by Bill Buper. It was titled Question Obedience. And it had very much to do with how fear plays a role in our lives until we learn how to outgrow that fear, and it becomes too small for us to put on, kind of. And you do that through the process of self-adaptation to this environment, and that's learning. Mm-hmm. That's learning about yourself, and it's learning about the environment and the people around you, and that's the most valuable information that you can use to formulate your decisions. It's knowledge about yourself and knowledge about your environment, and keeping that in sync, synchronization through inductive and deductive logic. These are basic tools that we should all understand and be able. It's just like, if you have a PC or a Mac, there are certain tools you use to maintain that your operating system and stuff. But we don't have those checks and balances built into us because we live in a society that continually wants to take advantage of us, if not in a physical sense, through forced coercion at gunpoint, for taxation or, obeying laws. It's certainly through the intellectual subversion. And this is why I also think that individuals need to practice and learn their own forms of intellectual self-defense. How do you protect yourself from things that aren't true, lies that are being told, so that you don't get your choice and your free will subverted by somebody else who's lying to you? Mm-hmm. And this is where it comes into questioning and demanding evidence when someone makes an assertion, not just believing them or assuming.
Right. Well, but everything that comes out there, whether it's beheading videos that were made in a Hollywood studio, whether it was this botched up anti-Planned Parenthood video that was also put together by an anti-abortion group and chopped up and whatnot, misrepresented themselves to the IRS as some medical group, but they weren't. Back in my day, Rich, we used to have a saying that was, believe half of what you see and none of what you hear. But today, you got to say, believe none of what you see either, because nothing is presented as it truly is. You've got to really do the homework.
Well, if you do the homework on the recent released photos of the Queen and the royal family from Britain saluting the Nazis and that footage and that photography, that might be something that actually has historical merit, even though you can see it. But I would agree with you mainly that it's not about what people say. It's about what people do. It's not about what they claim. It's about what actually exists. What are the facts? And what you're talking about before with Planned Parenthood, that's just eugenics. They changed, they rebranded eugenics after the British royal family and several American noble families were funding eugenics and fed it to Hitler and let Hitler run his experiment, which they funded. They realized it had gotten a bad name, and they sought to rebrand it. Specifically, the Rockefeller family rebranded it through Caltech, and there's a great book by an MIT scientist named Lily Kay. It's called The Molecular Vision of Life. And in there, it gives you a great amount of detail how they went through great trouble to inoculate the American public and see this word, this phrase, molecular biology, is something to be prestigious and respected and right, not to be associated in any way with eugenics, which is exactly what it is.
Well, that's
positive eugenics and negative eugenics.
Right.
And it's all about controlling either themselves or us.
And
they deal with us, right, it's like farm animals.
Exactly. But, I understand the origin of Planned Parenthood, but I also know the value of it because I have friends and family who are both male and female that would have no health care coverage if they couldn't go to a Planned Parenthood. If you want to talk about eugenics, everything going on this planet is about eugenics. The chemtrails in the sky, the genetically modified food, the poison and fetal tissue in vaccines. And now you've got forced vaccines in California, and they want to change the law or add an additional law to force all adults in California to have vaccines. My thought is, as I've said for years, they'll kill us all using every means possible because that's their goal.
Well, I think that what you're describing is a myriad of symptoms that stem from a systematic corruption of our sense of freedom. Mm-hmm. And that until we understand how to define freedom, it's like, taking away our ability to get healthy food by presenting food that's toxic to us and absorbs poison and masquerading that as food, that's not freedom.
Right. I agree.
If you want to sell that, then you can label it as this food absorbs toxins, that are unnatural to the ground and unnative to the ground. That's fine. And then let the free market decide on that. But what we have, the reason that Ross Ulbricht had to go to jail is because we don't have a free market.
Right.
And that kid saw that we didn't have a free market, and he's like, well, I'm going to grow up not having a free market, or did he want to do something that he believed in? Right. So, you know, if we're going to put every person who experiments to create a free market in prison, they might have to make this whole place a prison planet.
Well, it surely looks like that's their goal, Rich. Anyway, Rich, our time is up. Thanks so much for joining me. I hope you can join me again next month so we could continue this. And again, people, get over to freeross.org. You can get over to Rich's YouTube site and see the great interview he did with this kid's mother, and I think she was great in it. I'll see you guys on Thursday for the news. So thanks again, Rich.
Thank you, Maria, and thanks to everyone listening.
Always a pleasure. Take care. Richard Grove, check out his work at tragedyandhope.com, peacerevolution.org. And he's been working it and busting his butt, too. The truth is out there, as they say in X-Files, which I'm very happy they're bringing back, by the way. But we can't force you to do it. We can't force you to listen. We can't force anybody to support what we do. We only do what we do, and I think I speak for Richard, too, because we must, okay? It's like our mission. So, again, thanks for supporting the show, and I'll see you guys on Thursday.
Thank you for listening and supporting The Maria Show. Tell others what you learned today. Knowledge becomes wisdom only when it's shared. Encourage others to subscribe today. www.maria.net. Often imitated, never duplicated. A world of information all in one place. www.maria.net. Always ahead of the curve. Always on your side. Get active or get radioactive. Subscribe today.